I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. We are going to continue this conversation about the opening of the Martin Luther King Jr. National Memorial here in Washington, D.C. The official dedication is this Sunday. And it is, as we mentioned, the 48th anniversary of the March on Washington on the Sunday. That was the first integrated protest march. And that was the scene, of course, where Dr. King delivered the famous I Have a Dream speech. And I'll just play a short clip from the speech. It's appropriate to hear those words right now.
There are those who are asking the devotees of civil rights, when will you be satisfied? We can never be satisfied as long as the Negro is the victim of the unspeakable horrors of police brutality. We can never be satisfied as long as our bodies heavy with the fatigue of travel cannot gain lodging in the motels of the highways and the hotels of the cities. We cannot be satisfied as long as the Negro's basic mobility is from a smaller ghetto to a larger one. We can never be satisfied as long as our children are stripped of their selfhood and robbed of their dignity by signs stating for whites only.
Martin King,
You
love that part?
I didn't know. Yeah. And I like to go back to the part where he said America presented the Negro with a bad check, that American democracy was a promissory note of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. But when we submitted our check to the Bank of Justice, it came back marked insufficient funds. It was a challenge to America to look at its poor and see them not as something to be cast off, but to see them as an enrichment of the body politic, of the vision, the culture, and the dreams of democracy.
Mr. King, I want to ask you, do you feel, you know, your father's oratory is as much a part of his, his legacy as his organizing and his leadership and so forth. And I'm wondering if you feel that the monument, that the design, is there any way that it could capture that?
Well, I think that the monument itself can galvanize so much just by virtue of what I think you stated at the onset, that 70% of Americans want to go see it. Again, that says to me that people are hungry for a different way of maybe even resolving conflict. And I think you'd find that overwhelmingly in the world.
Do you ever worry, though, that the fact that this monument now exists, that people will say, well, okay, that's done. It's everything. It's all done. It's up there on the wall. It's been taken care of.
I don't worry about that. And I'll say it for this reason. My mom, Ambassador Young, and others began an institution called the Martin Luther King Center over 44 years ago after my father passed. And the monument is what it is. It is a monument. It can inspire. It can encourage. But we, through other organizations, have to continue this massive body of work. My dad talked about eradicating poverty, racism, and militarism. We've made strides in race, great strides. But when you look at poverty and militarism in terms of expenditures, we've probably made very little progress. And unfortunately, poverty is growing. So there's still a huge body of work that has to be done. While we look up and are inspired by the monument, it is the work that we do through the King Center. I represent as president today, the work that we do through other organizations that exist that are going to continue to move or propel our nation forward.
You mentioned your mother, Coretta Scott King, who sadly is not going to be here to witness this official dedication, nor your sister, Yolanda, who passed in 2007. And I just wanted to ask, and forgive me if this is an intrusion, if that's bittersweet for you, that they will not be here to be part of this event.
Well, absolutely. That is probably one of the most painful kind of things in a way, because certainly over the years, this could not have happened without, mother, saying, this is wonderful. It certainly, and first and foremost, we owe a great debt of gratitude to the Alpha Phi Alpha fraternity and the foundation that they established to create this body of work. But all of it began, of course, when the Alpha Phi Alpha Foundation and some of its leadership was talking with Mother, and certainly Ambassador Young is an Alpha now. Has been an Alpha forever. I'm an Alpha now, so I'm proud to say I'm, in a little way, I feel a part of this incredible effort that the fraternity has done.
But let me get back, Michelle, because now most of the money that went into this, we wouldn't have seen anyway. There's no government money in it. This is private sector money. And
no, that's true. But it could have been devoted to other causes. I'm not criticizing it. I'm just merely raising it.
They wouldn't have given it to other causes. See, and it was only the presence of forcing them to confront his ministry and making them realize that you'd be lucky that this country wasn't torn up. And the only reason it wasn't torn up and the only reason we don't look like Beirut or Tripoli is that you had a young man who was willing to give his life to show that you could change the world without violence and destruction.
Finally, before I let you go, I just want to ask you, and Mr. King, perhaps you'll take this question. It was recently announced that the two of you are partnering to form a new venture called Bounce TV. It's a broadcast television network designed exclusively. What is exclusive in a broadcast network, right? Anybody can watch it. But there's already BET and TV One. So I just wanted to ask, what do you hope to offer with Bounce TV?
Well, Bounce TV, and I should also say that while Ambassador Young and are involved, that it's a much broader group of folks. But Bounce Television was designed as a network that certainly African Americans would embrace, but not just African Americans, as you said. It is for any and everyone who might want to see black-oriented programming, like, for example, some of the college and university sporting activities from historically African American colleges and universities. There will be some religious programming. There will be opportunities for commentary. So it's a very broad concept, but largely movies, because it has been found that the African American community certainly is one of the communities that watches a lot of movies. And what is the most important commodity, I think, that no one really has focused on is the concept that it's free television. This is not a cable package where you pay money for cable and anyone can get it in this country. And there are a number of folks in our country now who are having to make choices, so they're having to move away from paying for cable so they can pay for something else. So this is free access to people all over America.
Can I just say that when we were in Birmingham in 1963, we could not get on a single radio station. And the reason for a lot of the demonstrations was to get on the national news. And the movement was built around communication. So there are movies that we know of. Lou Gossett made a movie about a sheriff without a gun in Greene County, Alabama. It never was shown on television when you think of all of the creative things that the minority community has produced that can't be seen, this is an avenue, and actually we got with it because most of the guys that are working on this are under 40 and have already had significant experience working in television with BET, with Tyler Perry and Turner, with NBC Sports. It's quite an impressive group. Nobody knows their names, so they really are just borrowing our names. But it's something we believe in and something that I think it's the whole area of communications and access to an audience that nobody's reaching that Bounce can provide.
Have you considered news, offering news as part of that
service? I don't
know.
When I look when I'm overseas and I look at Al Jazeera, I look at South African broadcast, or I look at Nigerian TV, or down in Jamaica, you look at Jamaica TV, I get another view of the world. And so we really, we have not been engaged with them in their program discussions. They're putting it on as inexpensively as possible to get started. But there's no doubt that you raised a very powerful and relevant question. There is a black view of the news. The story I wanted to tell you, though, was when Dr. King went to see Lyndon Johnson. Lyndon Johnson talked for an hour and a half about him not having the power to introduce voting rights legislation. He knew he wanted to expand the Great Society, but he had just finished civil rights legislation. We left the White House and walked down that road. He waited until 9 o'clock to let us out, left all the press had gone. And we were walking down that dark road, and Martin said almost whimsically, "I guess we got to figure out a way to get this president some power." And a week later, Amelia Boynton showed up in his office from Selma. And in 3 weeks, we were in Selma starting to fight for the right to vote on the 2nd of January. By the 20th of March, Lyndon Johnson was before a joint session of Congress giving his famous "We Shall Overcome" speech and introducing voting rights legislation. Now, we made him a great president, and we made Kennedy a great president. We have not found a way to make President Obama a great president. We have not given him the power to lead that we gave to many others.
What would it take?
Well, that's what is kind of hard to figure out. Now, with Jimmy Carter, we were on the inside of his administration. When he was running for president, everybody else had one black, you know, staffer. He started out with 27 black people on his staff. And there was, I mean, we were able to help run that administration. The same thing is true with President Clinton. We were inside when we didn't have to protest. Now, when I was mayor, I let everybody in, but I still got picketed regularly by my friends, you know, in the movement. And they say, "No, you're the man now." And they'd be out there singing, "Pharaoh, let my people go." And I say, "Wait a minute, you know who I am?" "No, no, no, no. You are now in charge." And they showed me no respect whatsoever. We have shown this president respect that he deserves because others are not respecting him enough. But in giving him this respect, and I think that Maxine Waters and Morgan Freeman and others now are beginning to speak out and speak up. We're going to see, he will be reelected next year. You can write that down. And we're going to have something to say about how he's reelected. We got Clinton down here to Georgia. They'd written off Georgia. And we got, with Hank Aaron's help, 25,000 people out in Atlanta the weekend before the election. Nobody wanted him to come to Georgia. He couldn't carry Georgia. He carried Georgia by 11,000 votes. We had 25,000 people at the rally. If he had not carried Georgia, he would not have been the president. If Al Gore had carried one Southern state,
including his own,
president, including his own. Yep. I'm saying that Mississippi, Alabama, and Georgia have as many black elected officials as any state in the union, and we have sort of sat back and let the national parties dictate to us. So we're not trying to change what they're doing up there, but we're going to have an agenda down here.
That is the one question that I did want to ask you, though, about that I didn't get to ask you, and I wondered if you wouldn't mind if I ask you this now.
No,
you talked a lot about this, about the poverty question, and that is that, you know, on the one hand, this monument is being dedicated at a time when there's an African-American president, and that's an historic achievement and something we've obviously all talked about and experienced and lived through. On the other hand, there has been an historic loss of wealth in the African-American community. There are those who argue that decades of economic progress have been wiped out just in the last couple of years because of the recession and the disproportionate impact on the black community. And so the question I have is that when you look at that, both of those factors together, and you think of this monument being dedicated at this point in history, you know, what does it mean?
Well, it doesn't mean anything, mm-hmm. really. It means that we were at ease with a black president, and many people thought they were free. And so they didn't get out to vote, and the Congress was taken away from him. And that's the reason he couldn't balance. I mean, he couldn't move toward balancing the budget intelligently. That's the reason he couldn't tax people who are making billions of dollars. I mean, General Motors is one of the sponsors of this monument. But General Motors didn't pay as much in taxes as I paid in the last 5 years.
And General Electric paid none.
but there's something absolutely wrong with that. And we have to begin to energize our constituency instead of just celebrating a president and a monument. And that's what I think we hope to do.
Andrew Young is a former ambassador to the United Nations and a former mayor of Atlanta and, of course, a close confidant of the late Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Also with us, Martin Luther King III. He's a human rights activist and a partner in a new venture called Bounce TV. They both joined us from Georgia Public Broadcasting in Atlanta. I thank you both so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Very good.
And to read all the comments about the new Dr. King Memorial and to add some of your own thoughts, please go to facebook.com/NPR. Just ahead, it's the start of a new school year. That means new books, new clothes, and for many kids, new friends. And a new book makes the case that friendships matter as much to boys as to girls, although you might not know it.
They really deeply care for each other, but they're very comfortable showing affection by teasing each other and by tackling each other.
Our moms try to unravel the complex world of boys' friendships. That's just ahead on Tell Me More from NPR News. I'm Michelle Martin.